So, meditation. The art of doing nothing. Learning how to relax to the mat. First relaxing your body, and then relaxing your mind, and let everything get nice and peaceful and nice and still. Now, in order to be still, we can also use something a little bit extra today, because you've heard me speak for the last 20 years. It's nice to introduce a little bit something different, that when you are meditating, we have this thing which is really popularly said called mindfulness. And what you're going to be mindful of when you're meditating. First of all, we'll be mindful of our body, just so we can feel the different sensations in our body and understand what part is tense and what part is relaxed. And bad joke number one. There was a guy, I think years since I told this one, there was a guy who went to see a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist said, "What's your problem, sir?" And he said, "Well, you know, sometimes I think I'm a marquee. Sometimes I think I'm a wigwam." And the psychiatrist said, "That's really weird." But then a light bulb went on in the psychiatrist's mind. "I understand your problem. Sometimes you think you're a marquee, sometimes you think you're a wigwam. Your problem is you're too tense." Not bad. I'm keeping up to my low standards. But that's what it can get worse. You ain't earned nothing yet. But anyway. So there you go. People are too tense. That's why they make people laugh, because that just relaxes you a little bit. So you learn how to be aware of your body so you can learn how to relax it. Because when you're aware of something, it is like you have a dial on your, like on your car, which tells you whether you're running out of petrol, whether your car is overheating, whether you're speeding too much, all those little dials which give you feedback. And you also got the dial of your body relaxation meter. And when you're aware of that, you can learn just how, a bit of trial and error, how to make that meter go more and more to relaxation. To really relax. Deeply relax. Extremely relax. Ultimately relax. Go to all the levels of the dial. Because this is actually you get some feedback. Now, when you get that feedback, sometimes a bit of trial and error, you can see what makes you tense, what makes you relaxed. And you'll find what really makes you relax is learning how to let go. Learning how to support your body so you're not sort of sitting for an examination to join the horse guards at Buckingham Palace, which have to be really stiff and not move at all, be really tense. This is learning how to relax the body so you can feel the body relax. Feel just the arms and the shoulders getting really loose. Feeling everything get totally relaxed. And when I'm going to lead this meditation, I'm going to get you really relaxed. Because once you can feel your body, feel that meter, that dial, the relaxation meter get more and more relaxed, then you're going to take it really deep. Because then you can look at some of the internal parts of your body. Your muscles, your stomach, and all this other stuff, it can be so tense. And when you can feel how tense it is, then you can just learn how to just let go. You can actually feel you have something you do in your mind, and it gets less tense. It relaxes more. And you can notice that, and you can relax the body more and more and more and more and more. So everything gets so relaxed, even internal parts of you. So not only do you get really relaxed, but you also start getting healthy. Because when the body gets really relaxed, all the tightness and the tension which causes disease, or which is around disease, relaxes so much, the body starts to heal itself. Which is a wonderful thing to be able to do. It's been years since I've been to see a doctor. In fact, I don't go to see a doctor these days. Doctors come and see me to get healed. True. Well, I bulk bill. So this is how you can really relax, and you can feel that. And in this meditation, once you start to get relaxed, your body feels really good. It's what I call the delight of relaxation. Because some people, you know, you go to spas to get massage or hot oil, and that costs a lot of money, and you guys can't afford that. You don't need to afford it, because here you have your self spa, do it yourself, relaxation resort in Armada. This is a resort here. What do you think call this, Rachel? Club Med Armadale. Club Meditation Armadale. So this is where you can really learn how to relax, and the body actually feels like this. It really relaxes very, very deeply. So deeply the whole body feels really delightful. It's the same sort of delight which sometimes you can feel when you wake up on a Sunday morning. You don't have to go to work. You feel really cozy. Everything's really nice. Or what sometimes people do, they go on these holidays over to Bali or Broome or somewhere, just to sit on the beach and relax. And you can do it right here on a Tuesday night, even deeper, until you get this beautiful feeling of a delightful feeling in the body, just totally relaxed. Now that serves two purposes in meditation. First of all, you're starting to learn how to be mindful and how to let go. And the result is relaxation, ease, no pressure on your body, no tension anywhere. And once you do that on your body, which is, you know, you're more able to do it on your body, then you start doing that on your mind. But just getting your body relaxed is such a wonderful thing in today's age. People are just so physically tense, so much they can't even go to sleep at night. What's the point of having a bed if you can't fall asleep? So, here you can actually learn how to relax your body so much, it's easy to fall asleep at night. And you get far more healthy. And this is why this group, well, we do actually use a hospital, but this should actually be subsidized. You know, the health budget is blowing out, and here am I doing my bit to save the government from blowing out its budget by making people really healthy, and do they give me any recognition? No way. But anyway, here we are learning how to relax your body and get really healthy. Now, once you learn that relaxation, by being aware and learning how to let things go, being really soft, not being afraid, and sometimes fear is what makes the body tense, by letting things go, being kind, feeling safe, then you do the same thing to your mental world. All those wounds of the past, they're like sort of injuries to your body, like tight areas of your body. This is like all those terrible things which happened to you in the past, like wounds from the past. You learn how to soften them with kindness. You look at them, you're aware of them, and you know you've been hurt or you've done bad things yourself, and that's 50-50 most of the time, if you're really honest. But whatever's happened to you, you can look at that and you can learn how to soften it. And your little hardness meter inside your mind, you can realize when you really let it go, you don't worry about it so much, you just ease it. Then you find those problems of the past get so soft and so light, they actually disappear by themselves. They're just not there anymore. Just like an injury, like a hard knot of pain in your body, can just disappear. And then if there's any fear you have of the future, how you're going to survive tomorrow, that is like, it's like a tension in your body, like something pulling you. This is pulling you into the future, instead of allowing just to remain in this beautiful present moment. It's a tightness, a pressure on you to think and plan about how you're going to solve that problem next. And you can feel that tension, that tightness pulling you into the future. And with a bit of kindness, softness, you're aware of that tension, a little meter can sort of go softly, 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 until you find the future is not such a big, heavy burden anymore. You learn how to relax the past and relax the future. And when they get really relaxed, you find that they disappear, just like the aches and pains in the body disappear. And then you're just in this wonderful place, no concerns about the past, no worries about the future, just being here. having a wonderful time just being here in this present moment, your home, the place where your future is made, always now. And this becomes, you know, the first place you can really relax in meditation, in the emotional world. People go to all these places overseas or in Australia to get away from it all. People are really crazy. When it gets to a long weekend, they go down south to get away from it all. And they find everybody else is down south getting away from it all. Or they go to Bali to get away from it all. And they see their neighbours, the whole street is there as well. They can't get away from it all. So this is actually where you can get away from it all. What are you really trying to get away from? What are you really trying to get away from? It's all those problems about the future and the past. So you can really relax and just be here for a change. Because once you can come into this present moment, that is where real healing, real energy, real happiness comes from. Because number one, you guys are so tired, you're exhausted. Why? All that worrying about the future, planning, struggling to survive, and at the same time, all this unfinished business from the past which is weighing you down. You are so tired because you never had any emotional rest. Physically, you can rest in your bed, well, some of you can't even do that. But emotional rest, the only place you can find any emotional rest, the bed of the mind, is called the present moment. That's the only place you can find some peace and quiet from the emotional world. So you come into this beautiful present moment, just being here. Which is one of the other stories I say. When I just to San Francisco, I went to Hong Kong. I came back again for a weekend, catch up, make sure the monks were behaving. You never know what happens when I'm away. And they were all behaving, at least that's what they told me. And then I went off to Hong Kong afterwards. So I really travel around a lot, but when I travel, it's really weird. It's, I don't know how many, I think it's about 9 million people in Hong Kong. But those 9 million people, there's hardly any human beings. Same in San Francisco. It's very rare to find a human being in San Francisco. All I ever found were human goings. No human beings. They're always going somewhere, doing something. Never becoming a human being. Just being here. So when you get into this present moment, once again, you return to your state as a human being. Not a human going somewhere. Not a human doing things. Not a human trying to get somewhere. Or trying to improve yourself. I'm really down on people trying to improve themselves. What's wrong with you? Nothing. This is me. Look, how old are you guys? Look at you. You're not going to change now, are you? This is another bad joke. About that guy who went into the bookshop and he asked the lady on the counter, "I'm looking for the self-help section." The lady said, "What if I told you it would defeat the purpose?" You want that one? Okay, that's good, okay. For once I made Rachel laugh instead of groan. That's quite a victory. I'm really pleased with that. Instead of trying to improve yourself, be who you are. You know, there's an old thing here, story. It's a very key sort of theme or idea of meditation and life, basically. And that was the story of, you know, one of these young men who he was, you know, grew up with me. His parents were Buddhists, and so took him to the temple when he was really small. He'd come to a little class for kids when he was small, and he did well at school, went to university, went to med school, became a doctor. But the first year as a doctor, he came to me one day and he said, "I can't do this anymore." He wanted to resign, change his whole career, because what had happened, his first patient had died. And it was a tragic case. I think it was a young woman, I don't know, 24, 25, around that age. And she had two small kids. And this young doctor had to go up to this guy and say that your wife is dead. and your two children have got no mum anymore. And that hurt him so much. And you can imagine just what that will do to you. And he felt responsible. He was the doctor. And he couldn't save her life. Number one, he felt really guilty. And number two, he said, like, I can't do that anymore. You know, and I feel such a failure. I'm going to have to do another job. And that's what I told him. And this is an example of an important principle. So as a doctor, your job is not to cure people. If you think your job is to cure, you are going to fail many times in your career. And you go through the same experience you're going through now. And it's obvious that the doctors can't always cure people. You have to fail many times if you think that's your job. And that's not the purpose of being a doctor, or a nurse, or anyone in therapy. Your job is not to cure people, it is to care for them. And if you make that your main priority, your main goal in your career, you never have to fail. You won't always be able to cure people, but you certainly can care for them. And if they do die, they die having been cared for. Which means you don't feel so bad. And even the family knows their loved one has been cared for so well. It takes away a lot of the pain. Not all of it, obviously, but a lot of it. So that's where you can be successful at. Caring for people, not curing them. And I also said, as you will also understand, if your main job is to care for people, you will cure many more people than if you thought your main job was to cure. He got it. He continued on. He's a specialist now somewhere. But this is such an important principle. Don't try and cure yourself. Care for yourself. And then all those problems vanish. Don't try to cure your husband. You should know that by now. How many years have you tried? Care for him. And then he gets better. Same with yourself. So don't try and improve yourself. Care for yourself. Which is why in this present moment, when you've actually come here, don't try and make it different, make it better, trying to get rid of this and get that. That's just more tension, more work to be done. Care for this moment. Care for yourself. Open the door of your heart to whatever's happening right now. Just be. With kindness. You find that is the key to meditation. Don't think I've got to stop all these thoughts in my mind. If you think you've got to stop all these thoughts, it will drive you crazy. You won't be able to do it. You will fail. Don't try and cure your mind. Care for it. So in this present moment, whatever's happening, just care for it. Oh, this is very nice. And then you'll find the thoughts will vanish after a while. And you become very peaceful and still. If that doesn't work, you can always do this little technique I've been teaching people the last couple of months. I have all these little different tricks, and sometimes one comes to the front and I forget it for a few years, and then another one comes to the front and I sort of teach that instead. This is the one of the simile of the TV set. I can see a few Sri Lankans here. How many of you have been watching the cricket on the TV? Oh, if you haven't been watching the cricket on the TV, how many of you have been watching movies on the TV? Or other sports matches? For those girls here, if your guy is watching, a football match or a cricket match, have you ever seen them shout at the TV? You stupid ref! That's out! It's out! Now, a lot of times, that might be a cricket match being played in Sydney. And doesn't matter how loud you shout in Perth, they cannot hear you in Sydney. Or, you're watching a movie, and you start crying because somebody dies, and they're lovers, they should have been together. How many of you have cried watching a movie? Okay. You don't need to cry. Look, if any of you don't believe in reincarnation, look at these movies. They get reborn again in the next showing of the movie. It's only a movie, isn't it? So why do we actually cry, shout at at cricket matches, it's because it's actually when we're watching that movie or that sports match, we literally get sucked into it. Psychologically, we are right in the movie. We're a friend of the hero or heroine. We're right in the stands watching the cricket match. It's like we're in Sydney. We believe that so much that we think if we shout, we can actually influence the game. We get sucked in to the TV set or to the movie. That's why, you know, we get emotionally entangled in it. And that's exactly what we do with our thoughts. We get right sucked into these thoughts, whichever's going on. And the way to actually to let go of the thoughts and get some freedom from them is see if you can put the thoughts further in front of you and you're standing back, like watching a movie or watching a cricket match. You remember you're sitting on the sofa in your house in Perth and the match is over in New Zealand somewhere. Once you realise that, you know, that you are one place and the TV and the movie is another place, you're not involved, entangled, it's so easy to let it go then. If you want to. If you want to enjoy the movie or have some fun, fine, get yourself entangled. But if you want to sort of just separate, detach, it's not that hard to do. So if you've got like lots of thoughts going on in mind, imagine the thoughts are on a screen and you move away from the screen. Imagine you're a distance between you and what you're watching. And it's so easy to let go of the thoughts then. So you can be free and peaceful. You're not entangled and imprisoned by your thoughts. Because your thoughts can send you crazy sometimes. You can use them if you want to, but you can let go of them if you need to. That's how it's done by the experts who've been doing this 25 centuries. Spreading the old teachings for the modern age, how to be still and free from thoughts. Oh, what freedom. And that really is getting away from it all, because your thoughts drive you crazy. And, you know, there was, you know, some monks, and because we meditate a lot, and I meditate a lot, some monks can read minds. But any monk who can read minds, only usually read one or two. And that's enough forever. They don't want to read them by now. Your minds are not worth reading. That's what your thoughts are like. You know that. They're crazy stuff. If you could only see what I see, then of course you'd go, what are I doing this stupid thoughts for? So this is how we can let go. And then we can just be so peaceful. And when you get peaceful in meditation, just like your body relaxes, your mind relaxes. No tension, no pressure on it. It's free. And just like the body relaxes, your mind relaxes. It feels really delightful. It's beautiful having a bit of peace in the mind. Peace of mind is delightful. And also, just like when you relax the body, your body gets really healthy. So does your mind get really healthy and strong. Tiredness vanishes. Resilience increases. So you don't get angry. It becomes impossible to upset you. You don't get depressed. You don't get upset by anything in this world. You've got such a beautiful mind that you're healthy again. Healthy people don't get angry. They don't get upset. This is all a sign of like a lack of resilience, a lack of strength, a lack of joy. Your poor old minds are really sick. I gave a retreat in Hong Kong, and it was in the old psychiatric hospital. It just felt like home here in Perth. But anyway, people enjoyed it there. So that is how to meditate. Really easy. Any questions? No, thank you. Very good. Let's start. Okay, so I've gone on 5 minutes too late. So let's, first of all, because many of you are as old as I am, and maybe even older, please stand up and stretch. Creep those old bones. That's right. But remember, it doesn't matter how old you are. You may not be as young as you used to be, You're not as old as you're going to be. Go enjoy today.
Very good. Okay, so sit down.
I'll make one for me.
Very good.
Yeah, sure, I think so. Okay.
Here we go. So, right. Action. No, not action. No action. So here we go. Meditation, relaxation, peace of mind. So we begin by closing our eyes. That allows you to be more aware of your body. You don't have to worry so much about seeing stuff. And when you're aware of your body, can you make your body more comfortable? What can you move to make yourself more relaxed physically? If so, move it. If you need to cough, cough. Need to sneeze, sneeze. If you need to put your finger in your ear, you can do it because everyone's got their eyes closed, no one is watching. No peeking. People usually open their eyes and peek when I say that. So you probably think your body is relaxed. Try again. Ask your legs, legs, can I adjust you to make you more comfortable? So be aware of the feelings in your legs. See if you can move them. And watch that relaxation dial in your mind. What tells you how relaxed your legs really are? Your buttocks sitting on the chair. A lot of pressure on them. So fidget to get the optimum position. Then you got your back. You need to lean back or keep it straight. Don't think that every meditation has to be the same position. Just every day, every hour, sometimes I have to change from this position to that position because this is what happens, things change in life. But I'm aware enough of my relaxation, my comfort meter, to know exactly what needs to be done. Shoulders, do they need to be loosened up? Is there any pressure there? Like two people holding the ends of a rope and stretching it? See if you can learn how to let go. The stretching and pressure, pushing and pulling. So the shoulders, they just get really loose and looser and looser. And your arms and hands, there is no magic position for hands or arms. Just right now, what feels comfortable for you? Now we've got our head on top of the neck. Sometimes you need to just move the head backwards and forwards just to relax the muscles in the neck. And lastly, you've got the muscles around your eyes and mouth. When people are tense, those muscles screw up. So see how you can relax the muscles around your eyes and mouth. So there's minimum tension there. Take a look at your body. Make sure that through any movement you're as relaxed as you can possibly get. And for the next half an hour, if you need to adjust the body by moving, please feel free to do so. Now we go to the next level of relaxation. there may be a part of your body inside of you. Moving doesn't relax it at all. Be aware of that part of the body, maybe your intestines, or maybe an ache in your back, or an ache in your knees. Be aware and see what needs to be done to move the relaxation meter of that part of the body deeper into comfort, ease. At first we don't know how to do this, but with a bit of trial and error, we'll discover letting go, or kindness. And we can feel that part of the body get less tense. You can be aware of that. And you're learning how to relax parts of your body just through will. You can just do it. And you feel that part of the body get more open, relaxed. The pressure relieved, the tightness loosened, the tension eases off. If you have irritable bowel syndrome, you can feel that ache, that pain, and find out what's necessary to lessen that irritation. And your relaxation meter, you can see it gets more relaxed and more relaxed. And more relaxed. You can relax away the pain. And once you've done that for one part of your body, you can do it for another part. There's always tightnesses and tensions inside the body. We can learn by being aware of it, imagining that relaxation meter, and seeing what's necessary to bring that meter down to deep relaxation, extreme relaxation, and ultimate relaxation. Obviously, the more you do it, the more skilled you become. You can relax every part of your body. And the deeper it gets in relaxation, the closer you get to this feeling of delight. Actually pleasurable. It's why people pay money to go to these resorts or go to spas. And you can do it all by yourself. Keep on relaxing your body, aware of its sensations, knowing how to relax those sensations deeper and deeper. Just like the feeling when you wake up on a Sunday morning, there's no work to do. Stay there as long as you like. When you feel that you've relaxed the body as much as you can, then you can let the body disappear. Now, focus on your emotional world, the world of your mind, past, future thoughts, all part of that emotional world is most prominent. Is it some memory of the past which is still bugging you, or some fear for the future which you haven't resolved yet? That is like an ache or a pain in the body. Be aware of it, but don't just be aware of its substance. Be aware of its hardness, its irritation, its pain factor, its heaviness. See what's necessary to relax those qualities of heaviness, of irritation, of being a burden for you. What relaxes it? You'll find not fighting it, not trying to get rid of it, but softening it with a bit of kindness. You're relaxing your past. Not so hard anymore. And all that pressure on you to solve it, to fix it, all that pressure is being relieved, taken away. So your past can just be without being problem. Eventually, whatever happened to you in the past, so it gets so soft when you don't make problems. You don't react, you loosen up, no pressure, no trying to fix things. You relax. And it changes. Soon it gets so soft, like an ache or a pain in the body. It's so soft, it vanishes. That little relaxation meter goes to deep peace with your past. Eventually you learn how to do that. Means you can let anything go. Mindfulness gives you feedback. It's the dial teaching you how to let go. And then if there's any fear, problem in your future lying in front of you, something you have to face at a later time, whatever that is, do the same. Learn how to surround it with hope, with kindness, so there's no pressure on you again. There's no important need to worry about it. We're taking off this force to try and plan or fix things. So whatever it is in the future, you are relaxing, bringing ease to your future. And you feel the mindfulness gives you the relaxation dial for your future. So it can get so soft, so easy, that you can let it go. like you let go of the pains and aches in the body. So you just felt the body free at ease, peace of body, and now peace of mind. When you let go of past and future that way, the only thing left is now. It's a beautiful place where you get away from it all. Just being. Not going anywhere or trying to get something. Just being. And please care for this moment. Don't try and cure it. Care for it. And then the cure happens. For those of you who like watching your breathing, now's a good time. But do it softly and gently. Care for your breathing. Soften it. Always remember the relaxation meter. That you're aware of is how peaceful your mind is. So yeah, you may be aware of your breathing, but also notice how peaceful your mind is, or how tense. What's necessary to make it more and more peaceful with every breath. That's why I encourage people, they're watching their breathing. You breathe in, say as you breathe in peace. As you breathe out, let go. Breathe in peace, breathe out, let go. But have some mindfulness of how peaceful, how relaxed your mind is becoming. As you do get more relaxed, see if you can also notice the happiness dial. Be aware, the more you're relaxed, the more delightful you feel. Just in this moment, no time, no minutes, no hours, no days. This moment is just like when you were a child. It's all you ever have, just now. Don't be afraid of the future, because you're making the future right now. If you're peaceful now, you're doing the very, very, very best for what comes later. This is the best way to prepare, by relaxing in this moment. how do you feel right now? How peaceful is your mind? See what you need to do or not do to make your mind more peaceful, more still. Getting very close to the end of the meditation. So one last look, how do you feel? What's it like inside? How relaxed are you? How peaceful? This is the result of meditation. The more practice, it gets even deeper, more peaceful. Beautiful thing to do. I'm now going to ring the bell 3 times. When the last sound from the gong begins to vanish, only then open your eyes to end the meditation.
So we've got a question in the box there.
Yeah.
My goodness, it's my lucky day. Very good. And the question is, here we go. What is this week's lottery numbers? No, that's not what it says. So I've got to wait for you to get some lights on before I can see. Here, Ajahn Brahm. Something my wife here this evening, and her name is Something. She needs to speak to you and your advice urgently for information. Okay. So, I can't say all the names in here, otherwise it will be, some people, sometimes they have problems in their life. And how they solve problems in your life? Very easy. I know all about how to solve problems, especially marriage problems. First of all, how to have a happy marriage. Do you always argue? Who's right and who's wrong? That's why even this guy came up to me. This is what he actually said. He said, if a man is in a forest alone, and no one hears him speak, is he still wrong? The girl says, yeah. But why is it that everyone wants to be right and no one wants to be wrong, especially in a relationship? So I have developed this amazing new successful method for solving marital problems, where people always, they spend so much time arguing on who's right and who's wrong. So simple. It's called the calendar method. And the calendar method is, when you're having an argument with your wife, with your husband, you just look at the calendar, see what date it is. And if it is an odd day of the month, she's right. If it's an even day of the month, he's right. Problem solved. It means you're both right an even number of days, just about. Actually, she gets a few extra days, but that's worth it for peace of quiet. And it means it's not always the case. Why does she always have to be right? Why is he always right? And then it's fair, fair. So anyone who wants to solve problems in a marriage, just use the calendar method. Remember, odd day of the month, she's right. Even day of the month, he's right. So what day is it today?
17th.
17th. So today, sorry guys, she's right today. But don't worry, tomorrow you get your own back. Because what that means is, not important who's right and who's wrong. Is that really important in life? Or is it more important to have some peace and harmony and some love in your relationship together? So a little simple thing like that. But there's also the problem that, oh, he said this, she did that, and we keep it for far too long. And in order to let go of the past, which is what usually messes up marriages and relationships, there is my favourite story. This actually comes from Ajahn Chah. It's a long time since I said this. The two chicken farmers. Once there were two chicken farmers. This is a great story. Even though many of you know this, this is what's called like a golden oldie. You know that when I used to watch listen to music, there's always these old songs that they used to hear. Actually, I was telling someone recently, because you can't really listen to songs as a monk, but I get to do this these days because I go to funerals. And now, my age group is dying, many of them, so I go to people about my same age, and they're playing the same songs I used to like. So it's really good now. I like going to funerals. That's where I hear all this old music, which I used to That's just golden oldie. But you know, it's just young people. I don't want to go to that. That's really sad because I can't understand the music. But these young people. So anyone about 60 who dies, invite me. So some of these stories, like the golden oldies. So this is one of the goldenest of the golden oldies stories. Of the two chicken farmers. So the first chicken farmer gets up early in the morning to collect the produce of the night before. He takes the basket, goes into the shed, and he fills his basket full of chicken shit. And he leaves the eggs in the shed to rot. He brings the shit back into the house with him, where it stinks the whole house, and he's a very stupid chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two goes into the shed with the basket. He fills the basket full of eggs. He leaves the shit in the shed to rot. It will become valuable fertilizer later. You don't bring it into the house with you. You bring the eggs into the house where he could make a nice omelette for his family's breakfast and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That is a smart chicken farmer. And the meaning of that simile is this. You're all chicken farmers. When you go into your past and collect the produce of your past, what your husband, what your wife did and said, what do you put in your basket and bring home with you? That's right, you're shit collectors, aren't you? And any eggs, any beautiful stuff you've had together in the past, you leave that in the past to rot. And all you bring back into the present moment is all the terrible, rotten, nasty things you experience together. You're shit collectors. And that's crazy. What do you do that for? Leave all the mistakes in the past to rot. Bring all the successes into the present moment. Leave all the unhappy, unfortunate experiences in the past to rot. and bring all the happy memories, all the success stories, all the beautiful moments you've shared together, bring that into the present moment. And then you're the second type of chicken farmer, the smart one, who actually collects the eggs. And with the eggs, you can make so much more out of the eggs. When you remember the success stories, what worked, why you had a wonderful time, you learn the secret of success. You learn why it was so happy. But the trouble is, whenever it works, we take it for granted. Whenever we have a happy day, we forget it. Which means we never learn why it was happy. We never learn why we had a beautiful, wonderful day together. We don't learn from successes. Which just means we can't repeat them anymore. Now I know that some people say, if you go to the past, you can learn from the mistakes of the past. Ha ha, that doesn't work. You get divorced from learning. From remembering the mistakes of the past. You get angry. You lose your happiness, your motivation when you keep dwelling on the depressing stuff of the past. But if you remember what worked, and if you keep bringing that up, not only do you get encouraged, you get motivated, then you also learn to repeat the successes from the past. And I teach that in business schools. How? To let go of what didn't work, but if it did work, if something, some new line, some new way of marketing, some new product, if that really worked, why? Have these big meetings about why it worked. When it doesn't work, just let that rot in the past. And that is one beautiful way why we can have success in our relationships. The other way we have success in our relationships, because I know all about relationships. It's really weird, some of the things I get up to in my life. You know, I'm not only in Google, I also went to Facebook, the headquarters of Facebook, to give another talk there. So I'm a really cool mug now. I don't know if you guys down there in Facebook, they've got their own campus in Mountain View, Silicon Valley. But because they've got their own campus, they built the whole place, and even the road, and they named the road. You know the address of Facebook? Number 1 Hacker Drive. They named the road Hacker Drive. And the only difference between Google and Facebook, in Google, they have all these free bikes everywhere. So, you know, to go from place to place, you know, just get on one of the company bikes, you ride it, go to the end and leave it there, and somebody else takes it somewhere else. They've got this whole hundreds of bikes all over the place, all over the campus, but they don't have bikes in Facebook. You know, they have to be different. So in Facebook, because it's more cool than Google, Google's really old, Facebook is new, they have skateboards. So you see all these executives going from place to place on skateboards in Facebook headquarters. They even offered me a skateboard, but I politely declined for obvious reasons. But they still invite monks to go and teach them how to run their business. And one of the reasons is because, this is a nice little saying. Because I read this, for those of you who don't know, there's what's called, by one of the great scholars, suppressed Christianity. This is the Gnostic Gospels, otherwise known as the Nag Hammadi Library. About the same, in 1945, the same year they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, an archaeologist also found his ancient papyruses in southern Egypt in the small town of Nag Hammadi, and they turned out to be sayings of Jesus suppressed from the Bible. They've got authenticity, they're really ancient, and they've got all these sayings. And one of those sayings in there, in the Nag Hammadi library, supposed to be said by Jesus Christ, was, "He who knows themselves knows the truth of all things." Very brilliant saying. Know yourself and you know everything, the truth of everything. That is why I can go to world computer conferences or Google and Facebook and tell people about IT. When you know yourself, you know the truth of everything. That's why I went on 6PR once in a 6PR the radio program. Because I remember Brad. You know, he used to come here years ago. He was one of the producers over there. So he invited me one evening to go and do a talkback radio show on 6PR. And you know, he didn't tell me what show it was. It was 10 PM on a Friday night to midnight. And I know, because I was teaching in town, it was really late by the time I got there. I only just made it in time within seconds. So straight into the studio, you know, the headphones on, right in front of the microphone, red light on, means we were broadcasting, and that's when they introduced me. We didn't have enough time to actually get the title right, you know, Ajahn Brahm. So you know, it had to do really quickly, so they said, it's alright if we call you Mr. Monk. That's okay, I don't mind that. Mr. Monk, that was Mr. Monk. And then they introduced me, here's Mr. Monk, abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery, spiritual director, dictator, whatever. And sitting next to him is Dr. Gabriel Morrissey, the renowned sexologist. And I thought, what? The author of many books on erectile dysfunction and other problems in marriage. And I thought, oh my goodness, what show am I on? And it was on adult themes. You know, it was late at night, Friday night, of course it's that sort of stuff. And so, so you had all these questions from the people ringing in, like taxi drivers and other people staying up late at night, all asking their problems about their marriage. And they had a choice, you know, Dr. Morrissey or Mr. Monk. And this is absolutely true. After about 10 minutes, all the calls were coming to me. Every one of them, because I was obviously the expert. And I was, and why is that the case? Because when you know the truth of yourself, you know the truth of all things, including sex and stuff like that. It's absolutely true. So marriage is easy for me. I've been celibate for 40 years. That's so easy. Look, what is the problem with a marriage? Say this again when people get married. Get it right first of all, then they don't cause me problems later. So, straight away, you look at the... I usually start with the bride and say, from now on, you're a married woman. You must not think of yourself. She gets it, yeah. You can't think of yourself in a marriage. And then I look at the groom, the guy. And it's not just Australian guys. I do this over in Hong Kong. Exactly the same. You must not think of yourself. You're a married man now. And the guy always pauses. He says yes eventually. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? I say, okay. Still looking at the guy, and I say, from this moment on, you're a married man, you must not think of her, your wife. And then I turn to the wife. I say, you're a married woman now, you mustn't think of him, your husband. And this is a beautiful moment. People haven't got a clue what I'm up to. And then I tell them the solution. So now on, you're married, you must not think of yourself, nor must you think of your partner. You must only think of us. Because marriage is not about the other person. It's not about you. It's about us. And you can see where people make the mistake in marriages. Sometimes you're either selfish or you're sacrificing. Both are absolutely wrong. Instead of sacrificing, instead of being selfish, it's another whole ball game. It's about us. So if there's anyone, any problem in the marriage, whose problem is it? Our problem, yeah, exactly, our problem, pretty much. Right. Yeah, you're the problem. It's our problem. So it's never his problem, it's never her problem, and it's not my problem, it's always our problem. And it's amazing that if it really is our problem and you both own the problem, there's always solutions you can find. But if it's somebody else's problem, or if it's your own problem and your partner won't help you out, there's no solution. It's our problem, it's so easy to find solutions. And the last little... Oh, I've got to type another couple of... I've been doing this similarly recently, I did it last Friday as well. It's really powerful. is when you have a problem, you know, in a relationship, in a marriage, or anywhere, it's amazing how people take it out of all proportions. Because what they do is the simile of how big is my hand? You see my hand now? How big is my hand? My hand is now so big, I can't see any of you. All I can see in life is my hand. Is it because my hand is too big, or is it because I've lost perspective? If I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, it hasn't changed its size, it's still exactly the same size hand, but now I can see every one of you, and I can see the wall, I can see the wall when I go outside, I can see the night sky and the trees and the birds and everything. My hand hasn't changed its size, but now I've got perspective. A lot of times, troubles in marriages or any other troubles in your life, the biggest problem is you're holding it right up here. And because that's all you can see, you've lost perspective. It's a huge problem. You put it out here where it belongs. Yeah, there's a problem. There's a difficulty there. But there's so much more than that problem. It's not that hard to accept. And the last story is of solving problems in marriages. If you want to have a happy marriage, then please lower your expectations. Lower your expectations of your husband, and then you can be very happy. Lower your expectations of your wife, and then you can also be very happy. We have far too high expectations. You know what it's like when people have high expectations of you? They always put pressure on you. And when they put pressure on you to try and meet what they expect of you, you're not good enough, darling, you're not earning enough, you're not smart enough, you're not kind enough, you're not this enough. When you put that sort of pressure on people, they get worse. But if you lower your expectations of your partner, they get better. So in order to know how to lower expectations, there is the time when I was a school teacher. I taught in high school for 1 year, taught teenagers. That was one of the main reasons why I became a monk. And I had to learn how to set my first examination, and it was in math. I'd never done that before, so I went to a senior teacher to ask for some advice. How do you set examinations? And one piece of advice he gave me, just I use that not just in setting examinations, I use that in life and for myself and for everything. Because he said if you set the examination too easy, so all of your students get 95%, 100%, it's a total waste of time. If it's too difficult, so all the kids in your class, they get 30%, 20%, then they'll get demoralized. It's too difficult. They'll come away thinking that maths is too hard, I can't do it, and they'll give up. So he asked me to try and set the average score to 70%. Because if the average number of kids get 70%, they'll all come away thinking, yeah, I can do maths. Yeah, it's not that hard. They get encouraged. And what's really important, the 30% where they make mistakes, that's where I, as their teacher, can learn, you know, their weak points, what they didn't understand. It gives me feedback. So in the next few lessons, I can actually teach, you know, where they made mistakes. And I realize that's not just for math, that's for life. If you always get 100% in life, you have a nice time, but you learn nothing. If you only get 20-30% in life, you'll be depressed. But 70% is the best. Yeah, you're doing reasonably well, but where you make mistakes, where there's problems and troubles, that is where you learn. That is the growth part of life. The 30%, which is painful and difficult. So that's life in a marriage. If you've got a husband who is 100%, get rid of him. You're not going to learn anything from that. If he's 70%, he's the best. 30% stupid, wrong, arrogant, proud, selfish, whatever it is. Because that's where you can learn. Same with the girls as well. If only 20%, 30%, oh, that's just really too high. But 70% is the best. So what it's doing, it's redefining perfection. Redefining what you can expect. Which means you lower your expectations to that 70%. And that is good enough. For those Buddhists who were here, the last time I taught this over in Nolamara, they said, oh, 70%, so there's 5 precepts for Buddhists, so I only have to keep 3.5. I said, well, not really. But anyway, that's the 70% rule. So how you can live happily in life. Remember those naughty little stories.
Mm.
Number one, in a marriage, if it's an odd day of the month, she's right. Even day of the month, he's right. Look, it's worth it. You have a much happier life if you just follow that simple rule. No argument, calendar is there, easy to decide who's right and who's wrong. And it's fair, fair. Number two, remember, a marriage is not about him or her, it's about us. Number three, is don't be a shit collector in life. Otherwise, you won't be able to stay with anybody. Collect the beautiful eggs of your time together. And when you're an egg collector, you can become far, far happier in life, and also wiser in life. You learn from successes, not from mistakes. And what was the other ones I said? The other hand, all the problems in life is just because you've got things too close, you put perspective, it's not that big a deal. So just, you know, put it where it belongs. There's more to life than those faults, which we obsess about. And last of all, what's the last one I said? 70%, yes. You see, I remembered 70% of what I said, but I forgot. So I am true to my teaching. Thank you very much. Well, any comments, questions or complaints? Does that solve all the marriage problems in life?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. See, so no one needs to go see a marriage counsellor anymore. No lawyers. Lawyers hate me. Any questions, comments, complaints? Anything else you want to say?
Good.
They are quite. Very good. So anyway, nice to see you.
Okay.
Next time I'm going off to Brisbane next week.
Brisbane?
And then Indonesia afterwards. Very Brisbane. The world is my tip. If you want to see the world, become a monk. Be the one. I had a really good time over again in Google and also in Facebook, but I also went over to Hong Kong. And because I've been teaching people in Cathay Pacific, the HR, Human Resources Manager, who's now a disciple, he's going to sponsor my next trip over there. And no, he's a Londoner. And he took me inside the training area of Cathay Pacific, the airline. So I went into a flight simulator. It's totally illegal, but they took me inside there. So now I know how to hijack planes. Really good. You're getting to do all these really cool things as much. Going to flight simulators. See all the slides and stuff.
Do you keep a diary of all the stuff that you do?
I keep it in my head.
In your head?
Yes.
He keeps a diary.
Such interesting reading.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, at the time when I had the dinner with Her Majesty the Queen,
uh-huh.
Queen Elizabeth II, I had dinner with her.
Is
that a true story? Yeah, this is not a joke. This is a great story because this was Commonwealth Games. What was that? 2006 or something. 18 or whatever. Anyway, so I scored an invitation from John Howard to attend a state dinner with Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. So that was in Parliament House in Canberra. There's a problem. There's a big problem. Because when I got the invitation, now imagine this invitation card. I mean, this is really nice card and everything. But there's a problem there, and that was dress code. So I looked at the dress code, and there was three options. And the first option was black tie. And I thought, is that all you need to wear? I don't know these things. I don't go to these gigs usually. So I thought, this is really weird, you know, because she must be really kinky. Just wearing a tie, no trousers or underpants or anything. And people tell me that's just code. That means it's black tie, suit, trousers, you know, nice shoes, everything. We haven't got a tie in a monastery, not a suit. We haven't even got a pair of trousers anywhere in a monastery. So I couldn't do that one. The next choice was military uniform. You can't have a military uniform. So I was really getting desperate. So, oh my goodness, what's the third option? And as soon as I saw the third option, my eyes lit up, I can go. And that's how I went, you know, using the third option. And the third option was long dress. This is all I've got anyway, so it's qualified. So then I locked up the Parliament House in Canberra. And as soon as I got in there, he stopped by security. Are you supposed to be here, sir? So that's my invitation, so let me in. Really good fun. And that time there's also Prince. Not Edward. But yeah, Edward, that's right. Edward was there as well. So I was with Ajay Sujata. And that was in I think, the reception queue at Billy House afterwards or before sometime. And so, because they were there, you know, obviously Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, they were all sort of hanging around then. So poor Prince Edward is by himself. So I took Ajay Sujata to go and see Prince Edward, and I said to him, because they've never seen him, he's actually getting really bald. And I said, no, you're losing a lot of hair. If you lose any more hair, you have to become a monk like me. And then Ajay Sujata asked me, said, who was that? No, Prince Edward. You can't do that to Prince Edward. Of course you can, it's Australia. So, yeah, great fun as a monk. Let's see what I'm like.
Can you marry people or bury people?
Yeah, man. No, we do baby blessings.
Yeah.
Baby blessings. I do lots of baby blessings. Marriages. And also funerals. I'm doing a funeral tomorrow. Cradle to grave service, madam. Are you planning to die? You're getting married. Yeah, we do all that sort of stuff. It's really good fun too.